You seek the key, but first you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today.
From a flat tire in the city to a dead battery on a distant drive, AAA is partnering with T-Mobile for Business to accelerate response times and get more drivers back on the road fast. Our nationwide connectivity powers location telematics, so AAA's fleet can find stranded drivers quickly while being fully equipped with the in-vehicle tools to have answers when they get there. This is elevating the member experience. This is AAA with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
Ryan Estes might be the most successful public speaker on the planet. Like, I've known him for about a decade. We have a really good mutual friend, Scott Cohen, who you might remember has been on this podcast a couple of times, the ultimate entrepreneur. Ryan and I have become good friends along the way while, you know, through our friendship with Scott. And he's always been such a great public speaker, and he's an inspirational speaker because he has so much wisdom and knowledge about business and sales and the world, and he speaks all over the place. But now he's written a book with his brother, Chad. Chad is an executive at many different sports teams, like football teams and the Cowboys and all that, and they have many stories to tell. The book's called Prepare for Impact. It's got a section that I highly encourage. People should read the book, but I also really encourage, read the 30 Steps to Success and come up with your own 30 steps. That's my one suggestion. But I also really wanted to know from Ryan, how does one be the best at public speaking? How did he start getting his gigs? I didn't know the full story. How did he start charging more and more money? How did he break out on his own and have the confidence to do it? How is he evolving? And like, what's he going to do when he's older and doesn't want to travel all the time to do this public speaking? These are questions you could ask no matter what industry you're in, and you know, what's the direction of your career and your wealth and your success and so on. You know, how do you transform from one stage to the next and continue that success? So here's Ryan Estes. Such a pleasure to talk to this friend of mine, and I'm sure everyone's gonna be impacted by this. And again, his book is Prepare for Impact.
This isn't your average business podcast, and he's not your average host. This is the James Altucher Show.
Ryan, let me ask you this. You are a super successful public speaker. You went from being super successful sales guy. You wrote 30 Steps for Success, and it's become this book now with your brother, Prepare for Impact, Driving Growth and Serving Others Through the Principles of Human-Centered Leadership. First off, most of your public speaking has revolved around the topics in this book, like the 30 Steps to Success and about leadership and management and sales.
Yeah, it's all about sales and leadership. And I would say that today, leading through change and leading into the future. But my work is pretty evenly distributed among those two topics. But you know what's interesting is up until recently, I didn't really leverage the 30 steps. I mean, I was telling you, really, for me, it was an internal thing. I really was just trying to help out Chad, and he's the one that took the content and actually leveraged it for work. I wasn't promoting the 30 steps. I'd never shown anybody the 30 steps and until we started discussing how he was using them in a different way. So I never thought they'd be in a book. But it was just art.
Well, what's interesting is that, like, you wrote this as, and we talked about this before, the 30 Steps of Success in Sales. And right. Chad, or the teams Chad worked with, kind of morphed it into the 30 Steps for Success, where it's slightly different. Although sales and success in general are important. Like, for me, I feel like I've never read a sales book, but I've run companies and I had to be the yeah. salesman for my companies, whether you're selling a customer or raising money or selling the company or whatever. And there was one point in your steps to success that I really relate to, which is enthusiasm. If you don't like internalize the message of what you're trying to sell, like you have to like become one with what you're trying to sell and be so enthusiastic for it, like it's an extension of yourself. That's, I have found, the key to any sale I've ever done.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. I mean, in some ways you could think of selling as the transfer of enthusiasm or the transfer of belief. I mean, ultimately you want to get somebody to believe about the future, what you believe. That, you know, your circumstances, business opportunity is going to be better served if we move forward in partnership. And so that, you know, transferring belief requires a lot of confidence, a lot of enthusiasm, and a lot of interest in helping somebody else get a great result, whether that's a return on their investment, growth in their business, solving a big problem, et cetera. So, yeah, I mean, that one, I think that's spot on.
And you make the point in the book, you can't just be enthusiastic about anything. You have to truly believe this is the way.
Yeah, I think if you don't believe, you're doing yourself an incredible disservice. And you should probably go find something else to sell. Because selling, and particularly today, it's a hard job. I mean, you're going to deal with a lot of resistance, a lot of rejection. It's incredibly competitive across many, many categories. Customers are fundamentally changing. Their expectations are skyrocketing. More people are influencing a decision. Technology is altering the landscape. I mean, it's a challenging job. And so to do that in and around something you're not passionate about or you don't necessarily believe in just for a paycheck, I think is a pretty tough way to make a living.
And so speaking of your living, when did you decide to go from sales to public speaking? And just to put it in context, I'm sorry to interrupt. You're probably, out of all the people I've ever met, you're probably the most successful public speaker I know. You are booked 52 weeks out of the year from what I've seen. And I've known you for a long time. You work really hard.
Well, thanks. Yeah, it's changed a little bit since the pandemic, which we can talk about. But my foray into it is interesting. I had a job. I was the chief strategy officer for an ad agency, and I talked a little bit about that with you. But in that job, as part of our business development strategy, we're doing a lot of trade shows and conferences. And I just realized, you know, if I was the guy on stage, this whole experience around meeting prospects, networking with customers would go a lot better. There'd probably be a lot more interest in us if I could be that guy. I was in a keynote once and I leaned over to one of my sales reps. I was like, I could do that. He said, no, you couldn't. I said, no, I think I could. And that was literally, you know, sort of the beginning of my journey. And it started out, we would actually pay to sponsor these breakfasts. And I would do a little talk in the industry about trends, maybe present a client case study. You know, 20 people would come eat some free scrambled eggs, and then we'd have two decent prospects out of that, and one would close. And so it was working for the business, and I was getting reps in. And then it, you know, got bigger and better. And I remember the time we started getting phone calls. You know, I'd go speak at an event, and then I'd come back to the work. And there'd be six phone calls. Hey, can that guy come and speak here? Can he come and speak there? What's his rate? And I was like, what in the hell? And so I started researching the business. I hired a coach. I went to night classes at the National Speakers Association.
Okay, what did you hire a coach for? Like, what were you studying in these classes? Like, you already knew how to be a public speaker. I mean, you already knew how to give a talk.
So two things. One, I wanted to understand if I was good enough to actually make a living. So, you know, I had a good job. I mean, this was to your point, like the risk of, you know, giving up my career and sort of reinventing myself, which is something you know a lot about, versus staying the course. Is it a real thing? Like how can you make a living doing this? And the second thing was, you know, I wasn't an entrepreneur. I worked for a big company full of resources. I climbed my way up the ladder, you know, the running the business of it. How do you structure it? Do people have a staff? How do you get bookings? Is there a marketing plan? Like I wanted to learn about it. So that was there was a coach and she wrote this book called The Wealthy Speaker. And somebody, I recommended the book. I read it and I said, you know what? I got to find this woman. I looked her up on the internet, called her and said, I want you to watch videos of me and tell me if I'm good enough to make a living. So that's not exactly how the coaching works, but you know, we can get you down the right path. And so that's what I did. And I worked with her before I ever quit my job.
I think that's smart. So what did she teach you?
So I would say that she helped me understand both the distribution opportunity, so how speeches get booked, and she gave me some sort of line of sight, I think, into, you know, the acumen of running the business, and actually did watch video and coach me on, okay, you're pretty good and pretty raw. Here are some things you could do to get better. So I would say those are the three things that we spent time on. But I realized 5 or 6 months into that, whatever it was, we were meeting once or twice a month. I was like, this is what I'm going to do. She asked me to come to a conference. She said, there's a national conference for speakers. You should come. So ironically, it was in New York City. I slept on Scott's couch. This is probably, when is this? 2008, 2009. Tim Ferriss had just published the 4-Hour Workweek. He was doing a breakout. I went to a breakout with Tim Ferriss, got his book. There was probably 30 people in this breakout at this speakers conference. And I was mesmerized with all these people that were in the, there was like thousands of people there. And Scott and I had a good time and he was pushing me to do it. And on the way, on the flight home, I started reading the 4-Hour Workweek. By the time I landed, I'm like, this is what I'm doing. And you know, that was it, man.
And then what happened?
And so that was, when was that? That was probably July, August. So I started mentally preparing myself. And then in January, which wasn't, by the way, a great time to quit your job, January of 2009. We're like in the middle of like the fallout.
No, like who, by the way, I was a public speaker then. And there weren't a lot of opportunities.
No. Yeah. In my mind, what was going on at the ad agency, like a lot of agencies, we're going through layoffs, right? And cutting real deep. And I worked at a division of McCann. And Christmas break, I was like, this thing's falling apart. We got back. Now, I remember on a Wednesday, my boss, our CEO, called. He said, we're going to lay off another 30% of our workforce Friday. And it's kind of giving me my responsibilities and who I was going to have to. And I woke up, I went to bed that night. We went to bed, I didn't sleep. And I just thought, this is it. I got to do it. And, you know, people told me not to for the reason you just said, like, no one's going to hire a consultant or a speaker. You're going to ruin your life, ruin your career, all these things. And I remember that night I called my brother and I called Scott and I was like, I think I have to do this. And they both were like, go, you'll figure it out. And I picked up that phone in the morning and I said, can you put me into this round of layoffs? I'm out. And that was it.
Was your boss upset?
He was. He very disappointed. And, you know, I think he thought I was making a huge mistake. I mean, you know, part of his thought was, this is a terrible time to do this. You know, like this is the last thing you should be doing right now. Like, if you really want to do this, he's like, you know, give it a couple of years and wait till circumstances are better. And I just thought, man, two years, I'm going to be different. The world, like, I had to do it. Like I geared up everything I had in me. Now, by the way, I was terrified while I was doing this. Make no mistake. Like anxiety, couldn't sleep. You know, I'd worked there 15 years, man. It was like my whole adult life. So,
you know, but there's something to be said for when nobody else is doing something, supply and demand suggests that is the time to do it. Because there are still people who need speakers. Like, I did give some talks during that time. And yeah, if you're one of the few people out there raising your hand saying, hey, look at me, then you're going to get hired for it.
Well, you know, you're right about that. And you know, the other thing, I think when you're starting out, I needed to build something. You know, I needed to build a platform and have videos and go do a bunch of free gigs to get reps in. And now that I'm not working for this company, what am I really going to talk about? And you know, build myself up. And so I thought, now's the perfect time to do this. There's not a lot going on. And I don't want to go into that place and run that business into the ground every day. That's not great. And so what if I worked really hard for 2 years and then when the market came back, I'd be there and I'd have a thing and a story versus just starting when it was good. And that thought really paid off, because that is what happened. The first 2 years were brutal, man. There were a couple of times people called me about jobs, and I went on interviews, and I didn't know what I was going to do. And finally, I just said, okay, I have to shut that down and just focus on this. And I got picked up 2 consulting contracts from previous clients, and that sort of floated me through those 2 years.
But and consulting to do what?
I was working with Mayo Clinic on their employment brand. They had all kinds of challenges recruiting physicians and recruiting nurses. So we did this big research project. It was like ethnography. We did all these focus groups. We interviewed like over 400 employees. We interviewed patients, and we came up with all these talent drivers and this employment brand, life-changing careers. I still remember it. And then I did a similar project for Microsoft, for Bing. So I was able to pick up these 2 cool consulting projects, and that was work I could actually talk about from the stage. And it was good, and it sounded good. Yeah, I'm doing some consulting work with Microsoft and Mayo Clinic, and now I'm speaking, and I took every speech I could get, man. It was the Yankton, South Dakota Chamber of Commerce and the Kiwanis Breakfast and Mitchell, North Dakota, like whatever I could get.
Yes, it's totally true. Airbnb has changed my life. If anything, they have made my life so much better. Like, I used to live in Airbnbs. I lived in over 100 or 200 different Airbnbs over a 3-year period, and I loved it. I became a really good guest of Airbnbs, and I got to know lots of hosts. So when I initially owned a house, the first thing I thought was, I'm going to turn my house into an Airbnb because I travel a lot. So why leave my house unused when I can make a side income by letting others Airbnb my house or come to stay in my house as guests? And having my own Airbnb or being a host for Airbnb has allowed me to do just that. And I've met other hosts. I've actually spoken at Airbnb's host conference. I think it was in 2017. I met so many just nice hosts. It's a great community. And I love, turning my own home into an Airbnb. Like, I'm traveling to Austin next month. My home's going to be an Airbnb while I'm away, and I'll stay in an Airbnb. I'd rather stay in like a 3-story house Airbnb than in one tiny hotel room in the middle of Austin during South by Southwest. So listen, while you're away, your home could be an Airbnb. Many people host on Airbnb, but there are people who are just letting their house sit empty, who've never thought about it or didn't realize their space could be an Airbnb. Hosting can easily fit into your lifestyle and is a great way to earn some extra money. So if you have a home, but you're not always at home, then you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. I remember last year I was asked to go speak at the Norway Business Summit, and I was so excited because side by side with the Business Summit was the Norway Chess Summit, where I would get to see in person Magnus Carlsen, the best chess player ever, playing chess. But it was 4 plane rides, like, to get to the city that ultimately I would go to. So I really did not want to fly for 14 hours, and they were willing to pay for everything for me. So I at first class. So I didn't want to fly for 14 hours and not be first class. So I had to hurry up and get on the phone immediately to get those first class tickets to a chess tournament in Norway. And listen, this is just like when, you have to know, when you want the best of anything, you have to act quickly or someone else will get it instead. And I did not want those seats to fill up. So it's like if you're hiring for your business, you want to find the most talented people for your open roles before the competition scoops them up. I just was talking to a friend this morning where he was trying to decide between some programmers, and he waited a little too long, and both the programmers he was interviewing took other jobs, like great jobs. So, you know, what's the best way then to hire the best as quickly as possible? ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/James. Just try it and see. You'll find out. So ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify the top talent for your roles. Immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. And I know this because one time I signed up as an employee, potential employee on ZipRecruiter, and I got nonstop, really, I was, even though obviously I wasn't looking for a job, I love what I do, but I just wanted to see what would happen because they were a sponsor of my podcast. And the most interesting jobs would pop up in my emails like, hey, you're qualified for this or that. And so it's interesting to see. So just go there and try it. Try ZipRecruiter.com/James. Amp up your hiring performance. Now, this is more for if you're hiring, but amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/James. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/James. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. How would you get the Kiwanis breakfast in Podunk, North Dakota?
Well, I'll tell you what I did. I started SHRM, which is the Society of Human Resources Management. I had a relationship with that association at my old employer because we did HR communications. That was part of our portfolio of services. And so we would attend their conferences. Well, it's the 8th largest trade association in the U.S. They have thousands of every city. Rochester, Minnesota has a SHRM chapter. You know, the Twin Cities has a, St. Paul has a SHRM chapter, Minneapolis, St. Cloud, Duluth, they all have chapters. And every month the chapter gets together and every month they have a speaker. Now, these aren't all paid opportunities, mind you. So some are, you know, some you might get $1,000 stipend and some you come and just get breakfast. But what I got on that circuit, I started speaking for SHRM, and my content got accredited by their governing body for continuing education. I was rated really high, and then I started to rise up. I've been the opening or closing keynote speaker at 41 state SHRM conferences. And at that level, when it's the annual state conference, they do pay a full proper fee. So,
and what were those first talks about?
The first couple of talks were about the work I was doing. It was about employment branding. I had a talk called, my God, this is crazy. I hadn't thought of this in a while. I had one about employment branding. I had one called Recruiting is Sales, which I would go into a recruiting organization and teach them sales concepts. And then, of course, I had a talk about sales. I think we called it Rockstar Selling. And then I had a fourth talk about leadership, level up your leadership or something along. Because those were the two things I had done. And I knew I was going to talk about sales and leadership. But I had to have some, you know, I had to have good HR content too. And then I developed a talk called Rethinking HR. That was another one I had. I mean, this was a long time ago. But I still get contacted by SHRM chapters to speak. I just got contacted to keynote at a state conference and I couldn't do it because of my schedule. But they still really support my work, which is just a beautiful thing. It kind of came full circle. So
you kind of like put the foot in the door, and it sounds like a great organization to do that with, because not only are you talking to their chapters, some of which pay, particularly these state annual conventions, but they're all executives at their employers, so they could hire you with real paying jobs.
Correct. I mean that, and so, you know, I have this sort of this thesis that every time you speak, it should generate at least one net new opportunity, or you have to, or something's not right. Well, at SHRM, you know, to your point, I could go do a job for Microsoft, but there's 500 executives at Microsoft. I could go do a job for SHRM. There's 500 potential new clients in the audience. And so that started happening and perpetuating too. I'd do a talk at CHRM. Three people would reach out and say, hey, we're having a leadership conference. Or Adobe reached out. We're having our global HR symposium. Can you come give that talk that you gave at CHRM to our global eight? So that's how I started AT&T. Same thing. I did AT&T's global HR conference from that those CHRM talks. And then every once in a while, somebody, the Louisiana Lottery, hired me to do their sales conference out of a CHRM talk. So, you know, the HR people are influencing corporate training and development, leadership development, helping plan conferences. And so it was just, it honestly was the perfect place for me to be, right place, right time, little bit of luck. And it worked.
And it helped that you did some talks for free in the beginning. Like you're talking about 2009, you're doing the Kiwanis Club or the Sherm Club in North Dakota.
Yeah.
It helps to be free. Yeah,
well, it did. And not only was it good to get the reps in, but I became a true partner to that trade association. I had done so much work for them. I think it was 2011, 2012. I got a call from the National Sherm Office. And the woman who booked speakers at their national conference, which I would go do a breakout for free, she said, I have a surprise for you. And I said, yeah. And she said, we want you to speak at one of our national conferences. I said, oh, yeah, Letty, I want to be there every year. She said, no, not the breakout. She said, we want you to be our closing keynote. Wow. And I was like, what? I didn't understand. I couldn't. Dan Pink was the opener. And his book Drive, it just came out. And, you know, that was a tidal wave thing. And she said, Dan's going to open and we want you to close. And I mean, you know, what's great about that is they start promoting and marketing this conference 6 months before the conference, right? There's like early bird registration. You get a discount. They're doing all these e-blasts out. And it's Ryan and Dan and Dan and Ryan. And I mean, that was my moment. I mean, if you would have looked at my website back then when that was going on, you would have thought Dan and I were either related or business partners. I mean, I took that and I went with it, and it started to work. And you know what happened then? I got on the radar screen as, you know, the speaker bureaus. They were like, "Who is this guy?" And you know, Washington Speakers Bureau booked Dan. They lost the spot to the second spot, some guy they never heard of. Well, who is that guy? We don't know who. And that got me on their radar screen. So that was two, three years in, and then it started to happen.
What did someone like Dan get paid for speaking at that?
It's a roughly. Great question. Roughly, at that time, probably $35,000. A lot more than I got paid at that time.
But then when you get started, like, again, like you say, the customers, your future customers are sitting there in the audience. So when Adobe calls you or AT&T calls you, like 30 is trivial for them.
Yeah, I mean, look, that's a progression. I mean, one of the things about this business is Sherm is a, you know, at their national conferences, they book who they want to book. Rate isn't an issue. I mean, they've had everybody, Marcus Buckingham, Jim Collins, you know, Michelle Obama, Hillary Clinton. It doesn't matter. And so, but my fee was my fee at that point. And I maintained the integrity of that. I didn't get in my head, oh, well, I bet he charges this. I'm going to quote this. I just quoted what I quoted. She said, what's your price? And I don't even remember what my price was, probably $5,000 or $10,000, whatever it was. And they were like, great, you know, that's not a problem. And, but slowly, incrementally, you know, yeah, you create, this is a supply and demand business. So your fee is commensurate with your demand in the marketplace still today. But I maintain fee integrity today. Last year, I got a call from a production company. They said, our speaker got COVID. It was a Wednesday. Could you be in Orlando Friday? And I could. I was speaking in, I think, Atlanta, actually, on Thursday. I said, I could be there. And I said, what is it? Well, it's a leadership conference. I said, okay, what are they focusing on? Who was the other speaker? Well, the other speaker was Deepak Chopra, and Deepak got COVID, and now they're hiring me. Now, I'm not stupid. I know his fee is different than my fee, but I just, my fee's my fee. I didn't, you know, I'm not trying to use that as an opportunity to create something else. It's just like, this is what I charge everybody. This is what the bureaus book me for. That's my rate. And you build some goodwill that way too. It's just your integrity and credibility. So yeah.
Do you ever get like imposter syndrome? Like you go on stage and they're all looking, expecting Deepak Chopra, or they kind of signed up for this conference hoping for Deepak Chopra. And there's you. You might be better, you might be worse, I don't know, but you're not Deepak Chopra, right? And he's like this famous guy in a lot of different ways. Like, do you ever feel like, oh my gosh, I don't deserve to be here, or why they're all going to be disappointed?
Yes, and I'll answer that. I'll answer that in two ways. So last year with the Deepak Chopra thing, right? Because that was a corporate event. They didn't have a choice. They had to be there. So they may have been disappointed that Deepak got sick. They'll rebook him. We've got this other guy. I just have to be me in that moment. I'm not trying to replicate what he did. But yeah, of course, you know, I'll share with you, and I've known you for a long time. I mean, when I sort of made the so Sherm, that day with Dan Pink, I was terrified. I was probably throwing up in the bathroom like an hour before that. Like, it's Dan Pink. Like, I idolized him. Like, I read everything the guy had written. Like, I was trying to become him. And now I have to follow him. And so that was a moment, like, my career started to shift. It was probably, I don't know, 2015, 2016, somewhere around then. I don't even know if we had met yet, but I started to break through. And I remember that year I spoke with Gary Vaynerchuk, Simon Sinek, and that was crazy. He spoke, then I spoke, no break. 9 to 10 Simon, 10 to 11 Ryan. And I, you know, I got there and I remember saying to the agent, why would you have me speak after him? Like, can't someone screwed this up? Like, you know, and that was my, he's like the greatest leadership keynote speaker in the world. And I'm just me, I can't, you know? And so I would torture myself in that way. I would go through that and be intimidated and overwhelmed. And, there were some experiences that I went through in my life that, just helped me recognize that, you know, he's a person. I'm a person. I have this experience. He has that experience. I'm being invited to be here because someone thought it. And I just have, I have to remind myself of that, because it is easy to get, you know, intimidated or starstruck when there's a celebrity or a famous athlete or somebody you really admire. And yeah, I've had to deal with that on this journey. And I think I deal with it better today than I did then. I am able to sleep a few hours, no matter who the other speaker is. But yeah, man, I've absolutely been through that.
There's one time I had to speak at a conference right after Julian Assange. So he's the famous WikiLeaks guy.
Yeah.
And they videoed him in from the Ecuadorian embassy in the UK, where he was kind of like a prisoner. And I had to speak immediately after him. And so I was really scared and I had to figure out what to do. And so he had said something about how, like, everybody is listening to your phone all the time. Like, all the three-letter agencies are listening to your phone conversations all the time. So while he was speaking, I was thinking how I needed to kind of break the connection between the audience and him, or else I was afraid nobody would pay attention to me. So I go out on the stage talking on the phone as if I was talking to somebody. And I was saying, like, yeah, Julian Assange just said everyone's even listening to this conversation. So then I took the phone and I threw it behind me and I smashed it into like 1,000 pieces. And I arranged for the cleanup crew to come in with like this 12-foot long broom to like sweep up all the pieces of the phone that I just smashed. And everyone started laughing. And that's how I said, okay, now that's basically the transition. And so after that, I kind of got confidence speaking.
Yeah, well, and once you do something like that too, that's kind of an icebreaker. And if you can get people sort of dropped in with you, and then you just move into your spot, it's great. So, I mean, that's why I always start with a story. It's just a story I'm comfortable telling that I know is typically going to generate a warm response, and then we're off and running and I can get into my stuff. So yeah, but it's a funny business that way though. You know, when you meet all these people that you idolize.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and to that point too, like when things start to slow down, which, you know, this seems like a hills and valleys kind of business, or maybe I'm wrong. Like, cause I never did it regularly. Like, do you ever think, oh my God, this is it? It's like COVID, what happened? Like, did you think that's it? My whole source of living is gone.
Yeah, for sure. So two things came out of COVID. So, first, you're right in your assessment. It is a peaks and valleys business, and you're trading time for money. And with very few exceptions, there isn't any value creation in a business. I mean, Tony Robbins, and there's a few exceptions, but not for Ryan Estes. And so COVID, I had my best year ever in 2019. And I think I did 84, 85 events, and I felt this just incredible moment.
Including Scott's wedding, where you did this incredible toast.
Thank you. Yeah, that was great. So Scott's wedding, and that was, and so I felt at that point, supreme confidence, this is never going to slow down. And then, of course, COVID happened. Everything goes to zero. And that was initially a dark moment. You know, it's exactly what you said. I can't make a living. Like, what am I going to do? Or when am I going to be able to work again? And, you know, when we really didn't know what it was or how long it was going to be, but all my contracts were canceling. Virtual wasn't a thing yet. So it was very unsettling. But the next phase of after, you know, freaking out a little bit was, okay, that was a good 10 year run. You know, 2010 to 2020, like I did it. I accomplished a lot. I made a good living. What do I want the next 10 years to look like? And to your point, I said, one of the things I decided in that moment was I don't want to do this alone anymore. Not like this. Like, I love speaking. I want to write a book. I still want to do this, but there has to be more than that. And that was the genesis of, we formed a new business with three partners called Impact 11. And it started it during COVID, and that business is growing. And that's a whole different experience. And it's tangential to what we're doing as speakers, but that is a business with enterprise value and with customers, and we've built a team around it. And I took another big risk. And you know what's funny, like back to sort of, you asked me about my start. One of the things I think I learned was, you know, when these challenges or crisis moment happens, there is opportunity in there if you can pay attention to it. You know, to your point, go contrarian, do what everybody else isn't doing, or okay. And I just remember thinking, wow, this feels awful. And I remember how it felt in 2009. What did I learn? And I'm like, there's going to be opportunity, and I have to start paying attention and thinking about, what do I want to do? How do I want to do it differently? And man, like all of a sudden you start moving in that direction, and people and things start forming around you. And I'm really proud of that, both that choice and what we're building. And it's a cool community. It's a cool business.
Well, and I want you to describe Impact 11, not only because it's related to your book, the title of the book is Prepare for Impact, but I think for a lot of public speakers, particularly a corporate public speaker, you're leaving money on the table if all you do is speak. Because really what you're doing when you're speaking is you're building a relationship between yourself, the company, and the bridges, the ideas that you're sharing with the company. And then to further indoctrinate the company in those ideas requires more relationship building and more opportunities for making money and education and so on. So describe Impact 11.
Yeah. So Impact 11 at its genesis was a community of thought leaders. A good way to think about it is that we're a speaker accelerator. So we've just taken the blueprint, our knowledge. There's four founding partners. One of the partners was doing this really on the side, wasn't building it or scaling it, but he would do a weekend workshop just sharing his IP, his approach, his strategy, his marketing budget, kind of opening the kimono for a weekend, because you know, he'd get five calls a week. I want to be a speaker. How did you do this? Can I pick your brain? Can I take you to coffee? You know how that goes. And so he sort of put this, he said, you know what, a few times a year, my team and I are going to do this weekend. And if you want to come, it's not, it's accessible. And so he became a friend of mine, and he and I and two other speakers, we got together during COVID, during the soft period, and we started talking about, hey, could we do something together? And so that was the genesis of Impact 11. And initially, it was a shared services model. We were combining our back offices, but decided to really invest in this you know, business of helping other thought leaders monetize their expertise and develop speaking skills. And it's a membership business. It's a community model. So people pay a subscription. We have live events. We have online learning. And we support our members with distribution. We, you know, agents in the bureau community support our events and come out. And so we've built this really robust community of experts and thought leaders. And part of one thing I didn't even anticipate was I've just met some of the most fascinating people, you know, retired pro athletes, Navy SEALs, adventurers, entrepreneurs, people that have done extraordinary things and now are paid to speak about it. And we built a whole team. One of the cool things about the business, or one of the good decisions we made, is we don't run it. We hired a proper CEO. We have a team that are building out the business. And we just launched phase two, which is our corporate product. And it's executive presence and presentation skills training for executives. So we're doing ticketed events, offering that as a service, but we'll also come into an organization or an enterprise that wants to develop that skill and competency. And it's just evolving our IP and our approach to training to fit for the corporate client.
So valuable.
Thank you. You know what, honestly, I mean, I don't know if you have any interest in speaking anymore given or what you're doing. But yeah, you would love it. I mean, it's for people that have written books because there's all this mystery to it. You know, what do I charge and how do I market and how do I get on representation? Should I hire a manager? Shouldn't I? Not to mention the stagecraft, the actual, you know, the anatomy of an insight is one of our blocks of content and, you know, the essence of storytelling and all of the things that go into both building the practice, evolving your body of work, and ultimately delivering that message in a way that creates impact. And then I also, to your point around leaving money on the table, you're absolutely right. I mean, you're trading time for money. And so having a service offering around the throughput. And I have also introduced that. So if you go to my new website, there's a tab called the Growth Lab, which is my offer, call it Beyond the Keynote, which is really consulting or advisory work.
Hugely valuable.
So, you know, between COVID was a gift for me because I got off the tread. I never would have done any of this delivering 85 events a year. I mean, but getting pushed off the treadmill, having a chance to step back and say, okay, now what do I want to do? And I wanted to solve some of the problems that you talked about, but I also, you've done enough of it to know speaking, in some respects, writing a book too, it's an isolating endeavor. You are out, yeah. You know, it looks glamorous, but you're out there by yourself with your laptop and yeah, there may be 800 people in a ballroom, but you're in the next city you're alone. And it was isolating. And I really felt like coming through this, I wanted to be part of a team and build something again. There are a lot of things about working for a big company I don't miss. And I don't know that that's ever for me again. In fact, I'm sure it's not. But being part of something larger than me became something that was important. I realized that.
From their innovative practice facility to unmatched views from the fairway
The PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with 5G solutions from T-Mobile for Business. Together, we're using AI-powered analytics to expand coaching tools and bringing fans closer to the pros with 5G-connected cameras. This is game-changing innovation. This is the PGA of America with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
Canva presents unexplained appearances. It was an ordinary workday until...
That presentation appeared out of thin air.
Also, it's eerily on brand.
Wait, did that agenda just write itself?
Words appear, making this unexplainable case...
Unexplainable? It's Canva's AI tools.
I can generate slides and words in seconds.
Really? The real mystery is why I'm only learning this now.
Canva.com. Designed for work.
So it's funny, the two big catastrophes in the U.S. over the past 16 years were, you know, in one, you completely changed careers from being an employee at an ad agency to being a public speaker and really making a great living at it. And then the second crisis, you start an entire business. And this business, it strikes me, this has real valuable in the sense that you could sell this business eventually. Like, it's going to live beyond you.
100%. I mean, it's...
And is the business also a speakers bureau? Like, do you help people get booked, or you just have relationships with the bureaus?
Just a development company. And that, we want to be real clear. I mean, those speaker bureaus, like, we have such good and long relationships. I mean, they're partners, contributors, collaborators. So our lane is development. Their lane is booking. But it's a partnership. You know, we're a big supporter of, you know, their governing body, their association. They come to our events, and we have relationships. You know, we have a whole sort of universe or constellation of service providers, from content marketers to website designers to videographers. We have a partnership with Amplify Publishing. So we've really built out, it's a pretty robust, and it's grown quickly. And it's, you know, it is exactly right. I don't know that I ever thought about it the way you sort of said it, these two events, these cataclysmic events. And they were so confronting, you know, initially as I was making what seemed like this decision, and I didn't know if I was going to be okay, and I was going out into the unknown. But man, when I think about it, they're probably two of the best things that ever happened. And I don't mean to diminish the carnage or the pain for other people. Like, I wouldn't wish, obviously, a global pandemic, but personally, it forced me to confront myself in a new way and make a bold decision that maybe otherwise I wouldn't have had the courage to make. And there's probably some real learning in that.
Did you get more confidence in yourself each time as a result? Like, particularly like with COVID, you know, that was probably a point where you were losing confidence in the beginning. You come through it and you're able to say, did you like outwardly say to yourself, man, I did that. I survived COVID and came out better on the other side.
Yeah, I do. I do think, you exercise that muscle, right? I mean, it's so I can look back and say, and I did think about that in COVID. I remember thinking to myself, okay, we haven't seen anything like this. The only thing I could compare it to was 2009 when everything was collapsing and my company was laying everybody off. And what did you learn in that? What mistakes did your company made? Because they've never really recovered, to be honest. It's like, and knowing what you know from that, what do you want to do this time? And you know what's funny? I started writing about it. I remember I wrote a blog post about, you know, who are you becoming? And make decisions today you can be proud of in 6 and 12 months. And don't succumb to all of the fear. Like, be smart. But this is a moment where some opportunities, things could look very different on the other side of this. And I, by the way, and let's be fair, I wanted them to. Reflecting, I realized I want to do the next 10 years differently. And yes, I am proud to be able to say I navigated it. I figured out how to be a virtual keynote speaker, right? And then you know what I figured out? I'm not a keynote speaker. I'm an expert who speaks. And my expertise is still going to be valuable to my customer. And why don't you think about packaging that expertise up in a host of different ways beyond just the stage? And I never would have taken those steps. New website wouldn't exist. The Growth Lab wouldn't exist. Impact 11 wouldn't exist.
I like that. I think you just said the title of your next book, which is Who Are You Becoming? Because that's an important concept. Like at any given point, we're not finished. Like I think my big mistake and challenge in life was like after I would sell a company, I would think that's it. I'm done. I'm done growing as a human because I did what I set out to do. I made some money and blah, blah, blah. And then I would go broke because you're never done. And who are you becoming? You're always becoming someone at every point.
Were you going broke because you took outside risks? Because maybe deep down you wanted to do it all over again? Or like, what was the connection? You sold a company, you could retire, you could be done, but then you go broke. Like there's probably something.
I think I would lose the hunger but I would still want to make a lot of money, like more money. And the combination of no hunger and wanting to make money is the exact opposite combination of what you should have. The real combination is hunger plus wanting to deliver value. And so I had no hunger and I just wanted to make more money, so I would lose all the money.
Yep.
But if I thought about it in the context of, listen, who am I now becoming? Because nobody wants to become a jerk, right? We all have this inner nobility that we aspire to. And so if I always focus on, okay, well, who am I becoming? How am I next going to deliver value? That is powerful. What you just said is very powerful.
Thank you.
You know, summary of like all of these different ideas.
Well, I take good notes when we talk. So, and this one's recorded, so that's good. But you know, there is something about sort of this idea of when you cross a certain threshold, it is easy to sort of lose the drive or hunger that got you to that threshold. I think it's a natural human response. It's like, oh, I'm safe. I can relax. And it's a paradox of conditioning yourself to realize there is no relaxing. There's no, I gotta keep becoming more. I gotta keep creating value. When the world changes, I have to change, and keeping yourself in that energy. And honestly, you know, I'm in that energy now because, you know, we just launched a new website. I just finished a book. I have Impact 11. We're launching a new product at Impact 11. I feel like, you know, I'm 23 again, just starting my first job. And having that energy and being renewed and being around other people who have, back to the word, and that enthusiasm again. It's and now there's AI, and we just launched Ryan Estes GPT, and people are asking me questions, and we're making it smarter, and there's all these things in the world that are happening, I do think there's something about, you know, it's confronting yourself, man, forcing yourself to say, who am I becoming? Who would I be proud to be in 6 months, you know, or 12 months into the future? And then lining up and moving toward that version of yourself. Because if you don't have that vision, you kind of can drift. You could start losing money, or, you know, spending too much time in Bali at yoga retreat, or whatever your version of not being the best version of you is.
And it's interesting because this relates back to the book and the 30 Steps to Success. We talked about how that evolved. Like you talked about 30 Steps to Success with sales. Chad, your brother, brought it into sports teams and it became 30 Steps to Success, but they had their own definition of success. It's like a manifesto of sorts. I wonder if you were to make your 30 steps now, how it would be different, because it's about who you are becoming. The 30 steps are steps to who you are becoming. So I wonder if it would change, if your personal manifesto would change now.
They would. It would. I think when I wrote the 30 steps, you know, I was sort of, you know, at base camp of my first mountain, right? My first summit. So, you know, I had a ton of enthusiasm. It was all this sort of young, aggressive, I'm going to climb the ladder energy. I was naive. And what I did figure out, to my credit, through all of that and through some discipline, really discipline and self-study, I figured out how to be a really good sales professional. And I was. I mean, I'm proud of that. And, you know, that skill really gave me an opportunity to have a different life from where I came from and the way I grew up. And that meant a lot to me. And I was trying to give that same, pass that on to my brother. But in this season of life, I think, going through some of the things that we've been talking about, doing some introspection, I think my definition of success is changing, and I think is markedly different. And so, you know, it'd be interesting if the Who Are You Becoming, the steps or tactics outlined in that book, and compare them to this book, they'd be different.
And, you know, you mentioned earlier, like when you're a public speaker, you're on the road 50 weeks out of the year. You're on the road all the time. And particularly as you're getting older, and look, our good mutual friend, Scott Cohen, he's been on the podcast 2 or 3 times. So the listeners know who he is. You know, he, at our age, recently got married, has a bunch of kids now. Do you ever think about, like, you can't go on the road 50 weeks of the year. Like, you ever think about that life or...
I have, Scott and I, and you know, our relationship. I mean, when I met you, I mean, we're very, very close, and we went to college together. And so, you know, we sort of were on that bachelorhood trajectory together, and he was very clear he wanted to have kids, and I wasn't so sure. And so, it would have been tough, and I don't think I would have done that well. And I've sort of reconciled that to a degree. That I'm okay not doing that, you know, but I do think, I mean, it's beautiful to watch him do it. And I do think it's brought a different layer of meaning and purpose into his life. And I think it softened him in the most beautiful way. And I do think you have to find those places that imbue your life with a sense of responsibility or connect you to things larger than yourself or contribution. Like a good way to say it, you know, a good shift is, or the way I think about it is, when I wrote the 30 steps, I had something to prove. I mean, I was in that proving energy, prove my worth, prove my value, prove I belong, prove I'm going to be the number one guy, prove I'm good enough to stand on the stage next to that guy. This season of life, I hope I'm evolving into a place where it isn't about proving anything, where I have something to give. And I think Scott has come into that season in a beautiful way. And that to me, I mean, that comes with wisdom and you know, humility and falling down a bunch of times and navigating difficult circumstances. But if this next chapter of my life could be less proving Ryan and more giving Ryan, I think that's a good evolution.
I think that as well. And that's, I was talking to Arthur Brooks, who he writes about this, the different seasons of life, and how when you're younger, that's when you're driven to achieve, and you have this kind of creativity that's very organic and unique. And, you know, when you light that up, that drives your success. But when you're older, your creativity is more about kind of connecting ideas and looking at things you did a long time ago and rearranging them in different ways. And like you said, giving, like teaching. So the natural thing is to go from like achieving to teaching others to achieve. And I've just been thinking about this a lot and also seeing my friends go through this. I think it's hard for me. I think while I do it, I've always been like kind of a natural teacher and I enjoy that. I still want to have my youthful creativity, and you don't have it in the same way. It's just different.
Yeah. I think sometimes when you really enjoy something or you're really good at it, sort of evolving out of that season of life is difficult. I mean, I think being aware that, wow, that's hard. And I still wish we were running up that hill. And, or, you know, I had that sort of, you know, naive enthusiasm to go just attack that with all that vigor versus this sort of reflective, wise, calculating my risk and my family. It's a different season of life. But I mean, you're a wonderful teacher. Look at look at the act of generosity that you've contributed through this podcast and your body of work and your writing and, you know, how much of your, you sort of life experience and vulnerability that you so freely give away. And I think it's, I mean, it's helped me. It helped me write a book that I wasn't sure was a good book to write. And I think, what did you just say? You know, and I mean, you know, the cool thing about like doing this kind of work is it has exponential impact. There's somebody in Sydney, Australia that you've never talked to, that you've never met, and you're never going to know, but they hung on something you said, and then they made a different choice. And then that has reverberation through their life and their relationships. And you are doing that in a way, and not to diminish your missing or your nostalgia, sure, about the other thing, but I just to reflect back to you, I think your chapter of giving is pretty robust.
Yeah, no, thank you, and I agree. It's just like you said, I it's interesting how you can get better at something through wisdom, through experience, through knowledge, but have worse results just because you don't have that naive enthusiasm anymore. And that naive enthusiasm plunges you over the abyss time and time again. As an older person, you can't do it.
No.
You don't want to do it.
No, you don't want to do it because you don't want to be in the abyss. You've been in the abyss too many times. Like and by the way, you don't want to drag other people that you love into the abyss with you. Like those are, and I see it. I see it in my friends too. I mean, you're reflecting it. I see it in Scott. And, you know, I know that's true in me. And there is some balance of me. If you can sort of connect or maintain some of that energy. And I have some of it again. I mean, I don't have what I had at that's in the 30 steps going up the hill season of life either. But I think, you know, some new partners and a new project and orienting myself in some of those things. But yeah, I mean, it's funny. Like when I was that age, I would have moved anywhere, taken any job, done anything, man. There's almost a fearlessness. And, I think you get a little more calculating in this season of life, but yeah, I mean, I was just with our dear friend Scott, and you know, we're reminiscing and telling stories, and you know, and with the big grins because it was like, oh man, it was so great when I did this and dropped this and flew there, and yeah, I mean, that's it.
I mean, I remember like this is like 10, 15 years ago. Scott would just on a dime on a Thursday say, okay, I got to be in China on Friday, but back here on Saturday.
Yep.
And try to do a business deal that would never work out. Like, I don't think he did any successful business with the Chinese, but he was constantly going back.
No, man, that was the other thing. He kept going. That's the best part of the story. He did like, the next one and the next one. And then I could be like on 11 flights over. You know, he's like, oh, I'm in Shanghai. Like, it's great. And he had that energy. I mean, he was relentless.
Yeah. Well, but look, everybody is in a good spot. And really, it's making me think this concept of who are you becoming? Because you're constantly becoming something. And you're different every day. So, but you get to set the direction for the most part. Maybe like at least 60% of the direction you get to set. And it's an interesting food for thought. So look, Ryan, Impact 11, great idea, great step. It's a way to take this public speaking gig that you've been so successful at for so many years and make it three-dimensional. Prepare for Impact, which is the book by you and Chad. Great book. I learned a lot from it. Like I told you initially, I don't even really like business books that much, but this one really made me think, like, what's my, in a way, I kept thinking of the word manifesto. What's my personal manifesto for the things I'm interested in succeeding at? And what would be the 30 steps for that? Like, and great stories from Chad about all these different football teams, great stories from you. Really learned a lot from the book.
Thank you.
And we've been meaning to do this podcast for a long time. And I'm so glad, A, you wrote the book, but I'm so glad we just did the podcast anyway. And thanks so much for coming on the show.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
From their innovative practice facility to unmatched views from the fairway, the PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with 5G solutions from T-Mobile for Business. Together, we're using AI-powered analytics to expand coaching tools and bringing fans closer to the pros with 5G-connected cameras. This is game-changing innovation. This is the PGA of America with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.